Paris is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. We are literally 1 week away from midterm elections. Man, it feels like that time has flown by, has absolutely flown by. Well, I am so glad that you have made the decision to join us today. There are lots of options available to you in today's time, but you have made the decision to hang out in the corner. For that, we are exceptionally grateful. I am your host, Abraham Hamilton III, here joined with the full J-Squared contingent, Mr. Jeff Reed to my left, Jason Tross to my right, Hannah Farah in the screening room. I think she's giving me permission to say her last name now, so I'll say it, in the screening room, and we are excited to bring today's program to you. As always, as most of you are making your way from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs, I want to simply encourage you to do so with a robust vigor, that when we show up at home, that we show up with intentionality, that we don't allow things to just fall by the wayside, that we don't make assumptions about our spouses, but that we show up with the type of intentionality and focus that is appropriate for our arrival to serve in ministry. As always, the positions that we have within our families are not merely the product of marital decisions or biological functions, y'all know what I mean, but it is an opportunity for us to serve the Lord in ministry. And I mentioned that we're a week away from midterms, and I urge you to vote. When I talk about darkness not being an affirmative force, it merely is the absence of light that also applies to our governing bodies. If Christians do not vote, if the people who are informed, who have the word of God as their governing dynamic, who use the Lord's word as the straight edge, as the light unto their feet and the lamp unto their path, if we are not engaged, what then should we expect from our government? No, we want to make sure we are present. We want to make sure that our influence is brought to bear on our government, is brought to bear on our societies and communities, and we need to do so. All right. Now, we will begin in the book of Joshua today, Joshua chapter 24. And this is, every time I venture across this passage, it always stirs me, and it's astounding to see. So, where we are, Joshua 24, the Bible tells us that Joshua, who was the heir to Moses in leading the Israelites from being the wilderness Israelites to moving into the promised land, the Bible tells us that Joshua died at the age of 110 years old. Joshua 24 is a chapter that details the end of Joshua's life. This is a part of his parting message, which you've heard me say before. I learned from one of the elders in my church in New Orleans that the parting message reveals truth. The parting message reveals truth. Chapter 23 is a similar message dedicated primarily, exclusively, really, to the leadership in Israel. Chapter 24 is an address that Joshua makes to the entire company of Israelites. And in fact, I'll read verse 1, for example. Chapter 24, verse 1, it says, Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and summoned the elders, the heads, the judges, and the officers of Israel. And they presented themselves before God. And Joshua said to all the people, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates, Terah, the father of Abraham and of Nahor, and they served other gods. Then Joshua goes on to give a brief recitation of the Israelites' history, which really is a history of God's faithfulness on behalf of the Israelites leading up to the point where they were at that time. It is important to note, before I read verses 14 and 15, this is not the wilderness Israelites. This is Should I say like this? This is not the first generation Exodus world Israelites. These are the descendants of the Israelites who were adults in the Exodus. They had children while in the wilderness, and it was their children, save for Joshua and Caleb, who went in to settle the promised land. So this is at the latter part of Joshua's life after they had settled the majority of the promised land. And look what Joshua says in verses 14 and 15. And every time I read this, it stirs me up. Verse 14, here we go. Joshua chapter 24, verse 14. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Every time I read this, it's amazing to me to note that Joshua, in his parting message, after witnessing, after living under the divine provision of manna from heaven, after living through witnessing God take a people of slavery, and made them into a mighty military force, after witnessing the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night for 40 years in the wilderness, after even witnessing how the Lord allowed them to move into the promised land to dispossess the idolaters who were there, Joshua still after all of that experience, after all of that exposure, after all of that, what should have produced reverence for Yahweh, which should have produced allegiance to Yahweh, Joshua still had to say, put away the gods that your father served beyond the river and in Egypt. So you literally have the prospect where you have the second generation of Exodus Israelites still bumping between the poles of, I'll say it this way, idolatrous affinity. The affinity for the Egyptian gods, they walked through Red Seas on that front, as well as the Canaanite gods. And before we are too quick to conclude with such detached piety, how often does that look like the very lives that we have as believers live? When we're close enough where we know where we should have fidelity to the Lord, we should have reverence to the Lord, but if the inspection is issued close enough, there may be remnants of idolatry in our closet. Thinking about the young lady who had idols sitting under her skirt, under her dress, you know. After all of that, Joshua still had to lay out an examination for the Israelites to make a determination. Brothers and sisters, after all that we've seen, after all that we've witnessed, after we have lived through the faithfulness of God on our behalf, you still choose whether or not you are going to give yourself wholly to the Lord, or will you still flirt with the idols of your parents in Egypt, or even the idols that you may have developed an affinity for in the wilderness? Choose you this day. Then Joshua then goes and concludes, as for me and my house, which is once again a statement of commitment on his end, but it's also a statement of indictment for the rest of the people that are present, because it is clearly indicating that as of the moment of him uttering those words, there were some people present whose lifestyles had not demonstrated a similar commitment to Yahweh. And here is Joshua at the end of his life saying, you choose whether or not you are going to give yourselves over fully to the Lord, because as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now, I am sharing this scripture with you today, one, to show you that if you had lived a life prior to this conversation we're having right now, to where you're kind of playing the hokey pokey with the Lord. You kind of put your right foot in, and then you take your right foot out. You put your left foot in, and you shake it all about. And you do the hokey pokey, and you turn yourself around. That's not what it's all about. I say repeatedly, the enemy's strategy is twofold. To prevent you from receiving the gospel directly and personally. But if he cannot prevent you from becoming a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ, the second prong in this strategy is to limit your effectiveness to where you are barren and unproductive in your knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ, as Peter says in his epistle. That is a newsflash for many believers, because we may not be aware that you can be, with your wonderful saved self, you can be barren in your Christian faith. What does that barrenness look like? That the faith that you have is solely yours and it doesn't impact or affect anyone beyond yourself. It may look like a person who never engages in evangelism. It may look like a person who has a very paltry and dry prayer life. It may look like a person who goes to church on the weekends just out of routine, but with no conviction, let alone fire from the Lord. What I am saying is, if you are one of these hokey pokey believers, don't be surprised if you live a life that's not very much disturbed. Because the enemy, Satan, old Slewfoot, the deluder, he's not smart. He's just been around people a very long time. And he knows one of the worst things you can do to a hokey pokey believer is to make life a little bit difficult for them. Why? Because when things get difficult, the hokey pokey believers will turn to prayer and turn to commitment, will turn to the Lord. So the best thing that he does in those scenarios is shh, don't bother them. It's kind of like Elmer Fudd in those commercials. Be very, very quiet. We are hunting wabbit, except in this instance, the enemy does not have a rifle, nor is he trying to slay you. He just wants to incarcerate you in a prison of ease, to where your faith remains just that, your faith. There's nothing about you that is impacting, nothing about you that bears the essence and the aroma of God's presence, nothing about you that carries the fire of the flame of the glory of the Lord. And I simply want to say to you, as Joshua said to the Israelites, choose you this day. Because the reality is when I search the scriptures, when I read the book of Acts, all I see as evidence of the Christ follower is passionate commitment to the Lord. All I see is people giving it all. When you recognize that God has captured you and has redeemed you from the eternal damnation that you deserve, the only appropriate response is to give him yourself as an offering of worship. But the reality is, many of us, too many of us, in my opinion, we're playing the hokey pokey with the Lord, not realizing that the enemy is involved in allowing the hokey pokey to continue. You put your left foot in, you take your left foot out. It's one of those things to where, you know, Lord, I'll serve you, but on my own terms. You know, Lord, you know, I won't be like those extreme Christ followers. And I say it all the time. It's one thing for you to have a conviction. But it's another thing when your conviction has you. As for me, I've been captured, man. I've been captured. You meet me in person, you're going to hear the exact same person you hear on the radio. Because the thing that I'm sharing is not even about putting on a show or performance. This is who I am. When I consider the fact that I deserve hell, but a grace-filled, glorious God stepped in, intervened in my life and snatched me up by the nape of my neck as a brand from the burning and set me aright, I have no choice but to give him my all. My best efforts are not enough, but it's by his grace, and the efforts are not employed in order to obtain anything, because the good thing about our Lord is he gives his best gift up front. He gives it all to us up front. And the simple encouragement to you is, if you recognize that, yeah, man, Abe, I might be one of those hokey pokey believers, the simple encouragement is for you just simply to repent right where you are and say, Lord, I recognize Abe is talking about me. And I ask you to forgive me. And I ask you from this moment forward that you would set me on fire. Point me in the direction that you want me to go and loose me like a laser guided heat seeking ballistic missile for your glory.
growing dissent against Roe versus Wade. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. Alabama Supreme Court Justice Tom Parker has urged the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. He states abortion is a constitutional aberration, a legal anomaly, and a logical fallacy. In a recent opinion, Justice Parker said that Roe v. Wade hinders the state's ability to protect God-given respect and dignity of unborn human life. He goes on to say, "It is my hope and prayer that the United States Supreme Court will take note of the crescendoing chorus of the laws of the states in which unborn children are given full legal protection and allow the states to recognize and defend the inalienable right to life." Wow, what an incredible statement by this judge that Liberty Counsel defended 2 years ago. We must stop this human genocide and make the womb a safe place once again. Stay informed at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all. No.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
I approached this year's birthday with just a touch of unrest.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
I sensed a gap between expectations and the reality of experience. One Saturday morning, I listed the things I've been asking God for the past 15 years. And in a column beside each expectation, I wrote to what degree I had seen Jesus fulfill answers. Then, on my actual birthday, I talked to the Lord about these expectations, promises, and heart yearnings. As a result, the Lord gave me a sense of peace about my relationship with Him, my family, and relational expectations. Every physical birthday brings you and me closer to a final hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. We believe that God knew what He was doing when He designed marriage to be exclusively between one man and one woman, and for each child to be raised by both a mother and a father. It's a form of child abuse to deliberately deprive a child of either a father or a mother and the unique, irreplaceable contribution each has to make to the life of a growing child. Every child, has a biological mother and a biological father. A recent USA Today story about two lesbians who, quote, conceived, end quote, a child through in vitro fertilization mentions in passing that the lesbians, quote, knew their own biological child would require a sperm donor. The sperm donor is the child's father, who will now be missing from the child's life forever.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. Well, I was just going about my business on a daily routine as I normally do, and this morning, and I heard some audio from our president. And one thing you can say, whether you like President Trump or not, one thing that you cannot accuse him of is painting in pastels. This man paints in broad, bright colors. And what am I talking about? I am talking about his announcement today that apparently he recorded it previously, but a clip of a show he's going to do with Vox on HBO aired the comments where the president talked about ending birthright citizenship. I want you to hear for yourself what the president said, and we're going to dig into this a little bit. It's clip number two. Would you please play it, Jason?
You can definitely do it with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can do it just with an executive order. Now, how ridiculous. We're the only country in the world where a person comes in, has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States for 85 years with all of those benefits. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it has to end.
And it has to end. Well, as sure as you expected, this has blown up the social media space. It's blown up the media space. And I just want to talk a little bit. About it. Now, what the president is proposing is that he can unilaterally end birthright citizenship with an executive order. You heard him say, well, of course it could be done with an act of Congress. But he said, then now they're telling me obviously, or should I, I'll make an assumption here, assuming that he's referring to his legal team, they're telling me that I can do it, meaning ending birthright citizenship with an executive order. So what is the president talking about? Well, what he is talking about is the understanding that children born in America automatically become United States citizens. And that is based on the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. And I'm going to read the verbiage of that amendment, and I'm going to get into some of the legal analysis on this particular text. And I'll tell you right out of the gate that the president's constitutional interpretation of the amendment, I believe, is 100% spot on. That the 14th Amendment does not grant automatic citizenship to any person who was born on U.S. soil. I'm going to read the plain language of the text. That's one of the things that when you have a consistent deconstruction of language, well, people then lose the ability to understand what plain black letters on a page mean. And I will submit to you that that inability to understand language is not an unintended consequence of regressivism. It is an intended consequence to where the entire world is subject to moral relativism and people live on, well, your truth is your truth, which is one of the most idiotic statements I think I've ever heard that needs to be jettisoned to the dustbin of history. However, I do not agree that the president can do this with an executive order. I do not agree that the president can unilaterally interpret a constitutional amendment. I know some people are arguing because it's under the ambit of immigration. I would make an argument that it's not under the overarching umbrella of immigration as it is citizenship. I don't think that is, I do think they are related concepts, but are not under the same umbrella. But let me read the language, and let me say this as well. The 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was adopted on July 21st, 1868. Now, that is critically important. I'll tell you why, but let me read the amendment first. It says this, quote, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside, end quote. Now, why does the language of the amendment read in that fashion? Well, I'll tell you very simply. The 14th Amendment, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were all amendments that were adopted following one of the most, probably the most, I think Brown versus Board, which ultimately ended up with the Plessy versus Ferguson reversal, not Brown versus Board, but the Plessy reversal was a great moment. But the decision concerning separate but equal, and the Dred Scott decision of 1857 are two of the most horrendous Supreme Court decisions, not to be far outpaced by Roe versus Wade and most recently the Obergefell decision. Those four opinions are the greatest examples of absolute rank constitutional violation and utter disregard for the Constitution, in my opinion. Well, the 14th Amendment was adopted to expressly repudiate the Dred Scott decision of 1857, which expressly stated that even the freed slaves were not citizens of the United States. The 14th Amendment was adopted to completely repudiate that. Say, yes, they are. Yes, they are. And in fact, the 14th Amendment literally is an elevation of the Civil Rights Act of 1866. And see, this is one of the things where one of the great deficiencies of the American educational system, because when you say the Civil Rights Movement, most people in America think immediately the 1960s. No, there were civil rights movements before the 1960s. You have the civil rights movement of the 1850s. You have the civil rights movement of the 1860s. You have multiple stages of the civil rights movement. Okay? Having said that, what the Congress in 1868 sought to do was to elevate the Civil Rights Act of 1866 beyond the level of congressional assailability into a constitutional protection, affording it more protection than normal congressional action. That's what it was sought to do. Based on that understanding, you would see why and how the 14th Amendment could not, by any stretch of the imagination, be interpreted to read that anybody born in America is a citizen. Because you have two components of the 14th Amendment. One plus one equals two. The first component is all persons born or naturalized in the United States. That's step one to the applicability of the 14th Amendment. Then you have step two, which is employed as a limiting factor on step one. Step two says, and that's a conjunction in case you're not following me there. That and, if you can think about it as a mathematical formula, it's a plus sign. Were you with me? So one is all persons born or naturalized, and that's a plus sign, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Now, what does that mean? Folks, clear statutory interpretation shows that the phrasing subject to the jurisdiction thereof is a secondary requirement in order for citizenship to arise for an individual based on birth, which gives indication, two indications, that there would be, at the time of the adoption of the 14th Amendment and going forward, there could be people in the United States who are not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. Yeah. Immediately, and there's even been case law decided by the Supreme Court that has ruled that the children of foreign diplomats do not automatically become American citizens. Simply because they're born in America is not enough to grant citizenship. You must also be subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And I have scores of research that I pulled for you, but I'll just pull a couple examples for you. One, Representative John Bingham of Ohio, who is considered the father of the 14th Amendment, he explained the language of the amendment this way, quote, every human being born within the jurisdiction of the United States of parents not owing allegiance to any foreign sovereignty is, in the language of your Constitution itself, a natural born citizen. It goes further. I want to get the other one. I have it in this stack. Senator Jacob Howard of Michigan, specifically when referring to jurisdiction, he went on to explain that he proposed the 14th Amendment because he wanted to make clear that simple birth in American soil is not enough to confer citizenship. All right? Senator Howard said that the jurisdiction requirement of the 14th Amendment is simply a declaratory of what the law of the land was already in 1868. He's clearly referring to the Civil Rights Act of 1866. If you scour, at that time, it was called the Congressional Globe. It was the precursor to what we now have as the Congressional Record. All of the debate surrounding the 14th Amendment expressly conveyed the grant of citizenship by birth solely to people born on American soil who did not have allegiances to any other foreign nation. That, ladies and gentlemen, by the very plain language of the statute, of the Constitutional Amendment, as well as its legislative history, would eliminate the application of citizenship to people who have entered our nation illegally. How can I say that so affirmatively? Because of the second component of the amendment and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. If there is a person who has entered our country illegally, they are by definition, as our federal statutes say, aliens to our federal government. Birthright citizenship was never meant to apply to people who break our law to enter our country, and then we say, oh, you know what? We're so upset that you've broken our law, we're going to reward you by granting your children citizenship. Now, some of you may think, oh, there goes Abraham again on his right-wing shtick. Let me tell you some of the reasons why this is the case, folks. And I believe this is a move by President Trump that is a very shrewd move, and I'll tell you why. What is one of the main things President Trump has announced repeatedly, that he wanted to end as it pertains to illegal immigration? It starts with a CH, chain. Chain migration. Now, why is that so important? Most people will tell you illegal aliens do not qualify for federal welfare benefits. And you know what? Statutorily speaking, they will be right. Except for this. Do you know if we continuously afford descendants of illegal aliens status as United States citizens, do you know that the very same illegal aliens that we're saying cannot collect welfare benefits, they are able to collect those benefits on behalf of their minor children who are United States citizens? Did you realize that? Did you also know, and many of you may not have known, that a child born to illegal aliens in the United States who is afforded citizenship within the United States, that they can initiate A chain of migration, a chain of immigration, when that child reaches 18 years old, that child could then sponsor an overseas spouse and unmarried children of his own. That very same child, when he turns 21, he can also sponsor his parents and any brothers and sisters. And guess what happened when all those people get citizenship? They can then in turn sponsor their relatives in a continuous cycle of legal immigration. Now, if that's not enough for you, the United States of America takes in, on average, 1 million legal immigrants every year. This blew my mind when I read this. Do you realize that on average, 60 to 70% of the legal immigrants who are granted citizenship in our country every year, between 60 and 70% are granted that citizenship status based on chain migration? Can you smell what the rock is cooking now? So the reality is, this issue of birthright citizenship is not some arcane sideline demonstration of overt hostility to immigration. We have literally erected a system on an illegal foundation that serves as almost 75%. I'm sorry, let me be specific. That serves anywhere between 60 to 70% of our legal immigrants every year. Every year. So it is my contention that the president's highlighting this issue of birthright citizenship, he is intentionally doing so to force the Supreme Court, that just so happens to include two of his most recent appointees. Because I'll add this into the conversation. The Supreme Court to date has never answered the question whether or not the children of illegal immigrants are United States citizens. Nor has Congress taken up the issue. Congress has the authority where they can articulate explicitly for the American populace what the promulgators of the 14th Amendment all said during the deliberations for the 14th Amendment, that this doesn't apply to anybody who just happens to have a child on American soil. It's not enough to have a child. And they explicitly even talked about the type of loyalty afforded to the United States of a person, that a descendant of parents who are loyal to the United States would have, as opposed to someone who is temporarily visiting here. I had a thought, I just lost it. Let me make sure I do this. Let me add this into the conversation too, that the United States of America is one of the few countries, out of all the countries of the world, the extreme minority allow birthright citizenship. Among the developed nations, only two in the world allow it: the United States and Canada. Canada is a country, though a vast landmass, they only have about 37 million people in the entire national population. Canada cannot survive without a consistent influx of migrants based on, to be frank, their very low reproductive rates. America has over 330 million people. America is not Canada. And even nations that used to have birthright citizenship said, nah, we got to change that. This ain't working. The promulgators of the 14th Amendment clearly articulated that they never intended for the children of parents who have allegiance and loyalty to another nation to be granted citizenship upon birth. Never promulgated that. Congress could have done it, but what is happening, because we have a president who is painting in bold colors, I think he is attempting to force the Supreme Court to take this issue up with two of his most recent appointees as justices. Because the Supreme Court has ruled that the children of legal permanent residents, they do get citizenship upon birth. But the Supreme Court has not ruled on whether or not the children of illegal aliens get citizenship upon birth. So I think the president is attempting to force the issue so there can be a clarity provided on this issue. And he, in true Trump fashion, is one of the few that's willing to raise these types of issues. And this is a conversation that needs to be addressed. Because when you look at the reality of the combination between birthright citizenship and chain migration, we are having the grant of citizenship in context that the promulgators of the 14th Amendment never, never anticipated. You may not like it, but that's the truth.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Will you be a fool for Christ's sake? This is David Wheaton, host of The Christian Worldview. No matter how educated or how winsome or how accomplished a Christian is, the non-believing world will still view him or her as a fool. That's because, as the Apostle Paul says, the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. But then he writes, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. So Christian, embrace being a fool for Christ's sake, as the Apostle Paul did, knowing the real fools are those who say in their heart, there is no God. Hear an interview with Ray Comfort and watch his new film, The Fool, at thechristianworldview.org. This weekend, we'll discuss what's at stake in the midterm elections.
Listen to The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton, Saturday mornings at 8 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. When our founding fathers were deciding what the Bill of Rights would look like, they decided the right to practice one's religion should be our first freedom. And so it was, freedom of religion, the bedrock, the foundation of our constitutional republic. We live in a nation where you don't have to practice your faith in an underground church. You don't have to worry about persecution. So when an anti-Semite opened fire in the Tree of Life synagogue, it was like a gut punch to the nation. Innocent blood spilled in a house of worship, the most evil of crimes. It was not the first time a predator has committed such an atrocity, most recently the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas. On that day, people of faith stood together in solidarity and declared, "We are all Baptist." Today, we stand with the Tree of Life Synagogue and declare with one voice, "We are all Jews." I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. You know, this issue of birthright citizenship and citizenship not being granted to people just because they have babies in our country, it didn't used to be a partisan issue. It wasn't a partisan issue. Not too long ago, in 1993, Senator Harry Reid, in case you don't know, he's a Democrat from Nevada. Senator Harry Reid introduced legislation that would limit birthright citizenship to the children of U.S. citizens and legally resident aliens. Harry Reid tried to get this bill passed. And every Congress since then, up until recent history, attempted to get the same thing across party lines. You had Democrats and Republicans recognizing, man, you know what, the way this birthright citizenship stuff is going on is not pretty good for our country. We're the only ones in the modern world attempting to do so. You know, they had other countries, Austria, Ireland, India, New Zealand, United Kingdom, the Dominican Republic, Malta, all of them used to allow birthright citizenship. None of them have it anymore. Because they realized, man, this is something that is not going too well. It wasn't formally a partisan issue. But you want to know why it's become a partisan issue now? And the timing of this is interesting because many of you saw the scores, the hundreds of melanated people like myself that descended upon Washington, D.C. and had a rally with President Trump. You know why it's a partisan issue now? Because the Democrat Party is realizing that they're losing their most reliable constituency. That's why. It's all about politics, not about preserving the American Republic. They realize, uh-oh, we need to find a new source. So let us run to the front to make it appear as if we have such solidarity with people who are illegally entering our country. In exchange, they will then, as Lyndon Johnson said about black people in America, we'll get those N-words voting Democrat for 200 years. That's what he said. That's what he said. Give them a little something, and they'll be voting Democrat for the next 100 years. And that, again, you may not like it, but that's what's going on here. That's what's going on here. And so I think they're trying to do the same thing with people that are enticing to come here as illegal aliens. Now, if you know, we know this. Harry Reid tried to get this bill passed in 1993. If we know this already, why won't we do something about it? It's only two options. Either we're ignorant or we're evil. No middle ground. I'm just telling you. And to that point, boy, oh boy. I'm just going to tell you now, Jason, get the bell ready. Another wonderful gem from this interview that Mrs. Clinton gave with Kara Swisher of Recode, who also writes from time to time for the New York Times opinion column. Sarah Swisher attempted to get Hillary Clinton's opinion on the most recent comments about when they go low, we kick them. And she got confused about who made those comments. But you don't have to take my word for it. Mr. Tross, would you please play the audio clip for the people I'm talking about, number one.
The Democratic Party is a much more diverse political party, attracting people who are African-American, Latino, LGBT, whatever the reason why people feel more comfortable where they are taken in, where they are included as part of a political movement or party. And I don't think it's politically correct to say we value that. And I don't want to go around insulting people. I don't want to paint with a broad brush. Every immigrant is this, every African American is that, every, you know, other person with, you know, different religious beliefs or whatever. You know, that's childish.
What do you think of Cory Booker's, and you didn't comment on him, and you feel free
to. I adore him.
What do you think about him saying kick them in the shins, essentially, start to get to that kind of political.
Well, that was Eric Holder.
Yeah, Eric Holder,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I know they all look alike.
No, they don't.
Uh-huh, yeah. I know they all look alike. Well, who looks alike, Mrs. Clinton? Oh, you're saying Eric Holder and Cory Booker look alike? Now, I want you all to imagine with me. Go to your happy place. Imagine with me that Donald John Trump said exactly what Hillary Clinton just said. Do you think it would have been met with such laughter in response by the audience? Getting Kara Swisher to even say, well done. Isn't this hilarious? We can all just crack jokes, because you see, once you put on that Democrat cloak, it's kind of like Superman's cape, you know? It's like a shield. It cloaks you from the vitriolic invectives like racism. You see, because she was just joking. When people who don't share her political ideology, they don't get that benefit of the doubt. And brothers and sisters, I just want to tell you, I read a Bible verse one time that simply says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. This is yet another example of what they really believe coming out of their mouths. Coming out of their mouths. On one end, oh yes, we are champions of diversity. On the other end, they all look alike. Now, do you think Hillary's going to face any backlash for it? Nah. It's sickening to me. The media is not going to call her on it. None of them are going to say anything. Because why? She wears the D cape. Dun, 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 dun. Utterly ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. I have more audio, but I'm going to try to get to some callers here. The phone number, if you want to be a part of the program, is 888-589-8840. That number again is 888-589-8840. We'll start with Buddy in Texas. Buddy, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hey,
Dave. You know, I wish I could see you face to face. You are such a great American, and I love to hear you talk. I was wondering if I was going to have a chance to even put in my 2 cents, but God bless you, my brother. What I had to say is about all these illegals coming from Mexico or whatever, South America. You know, we had a president that wasn't even an American citizen. His father was.
Buddy, I'm sorry, your phone is kind of fuzzy. I couldn't hear you clearly enough. If you can get a better connection, would you call back? Sorry about that. We'll go next. Next, we'll go to Alabama, where Joe is on the line. Joe, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Brother, I have been missing you, and I couldn't wait to get back and talk to you again.
Well, thank you for calling in, Joe. Go right ahead.
My comments are about they're related to the Judge Kavanaugh business. I am convinced that that senator, it's the lady senator from Hawaii. I think her name is Horanio or something like that. I don't know how to pronounce her name.
Mazie Hirono.
And I believe Senator Gillibrand from New York, made some very similar comments in which those two ladies, the only logical way their comments made sense. Remember when the senator from Hawaii was telling men to, to stand up or whatever it was? Her comments only make logical sense if you assume that she first divides people into two groups, those which have only two X chromosomes and those which have only one X chromosome. And what that does, that makes her a transphobe. Because Bruce Jenner and Bradley Manning they were born with only one X chromosome, so they will always be liars. They always were liars. They can never be anything other than a liar. It doesn't matter how expensive their dress or their lipstick is.
All right, Joe, thank you very much for your call and your comments. It wasn't necessarily related to what we've been talking about today, but thank you for your call. We'll go next to Tennessee, where Chris is on the line. Chris, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Mr. Next Attorney General of the United States of America.
How you doing, Chris?
I'm sorry, I just had to get that in there. yeah, I really do appreciate you bringing up the 14th Amendment and the part about allegiance, okay? Because here's one thing that I have a problem with also. I have a problem with dual citizenship. And, you know, to me, if someone has American citizenship and also has citizenship in another country, okay, do their children have the right to stay here in the United States of America and reap all the benefits, go to our public schools? If they have dual citizenship, are they getting government healthcare or any kind of benefits like that? If someone has dual citizenship, I don't think that if their children are born in the United States of America, that they should be able to reap the benefits. They should have to give up, the parents should have to give up citizenship of the other country. I've never liked dual citizenship.
All right, Chris, thank you for your call and your comments. I can't say I share a similar problem with dual citizenship, as long as the dual citizenship is established legally according to the proper understanding of the two nations where the individual would be a citizen. So if a person is legally a citizen elsewhere and they want to come to America, I have no problem with them being a legal resident. But on the issue of birthright citizenship, the Constitution and the debates that surrounded the passage of the 14th Amendment are pretty clear in discussing the requirements are not really limited to someone being born in the country, but it also includes the individual being subject to American jurisdiction. And that is what those who would argue in the alternative are doing. Because listen, in order for the idea for the provision of the 14th Amendment that says subject to the jurisdiction thereof to to be reduced to, well, they have to obey the traffic laws, and if they get a speeding ticket, they have to pay a fine. They're subject to the policing thereof. That is clearly not what is promulgated by the 14th Amendment, because that is already, that would be a redundancy in the constitutional fabric. This is clearly referring to the national geopolitical allegiance of the progenitors of the child, not merely the compliance with the speed limit on American interstates. And it's, and no jurist worth their salt would share this. And folks, this is not the opinion of just some conservative. You have Richard Posner, justice on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. You have law professors that are not conservatives that come to the same conclusion. Richard Posner said, in order to attribute to the 14th Amendment legal citizenship to people who just happen to be born here is to make a trifle of the Constitution. This is not a conservative jurist. And again, this used to be something where there was common ground found across party lines. But of course, if you find your party has been reduced to being, as it was in 2016, a Democratic archipelago as opposed to a national party, well, I guess desperate times calls for unconstitutional measures. Back to the phone lines we go. Next to Mississippi, where Carrie is on the line. Carrie, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, sir. I love your program. And this is sort of a leg-breaking thing where I didn't see it on the media anywhere, but apparently Hillary was in an interview last Friday, and the interviewer confused Cory Booker with Eric Holder.
I just played the audio for that. Yeah, I just played that.
Right. And so, you know, the media didn't play that, but, you know, she made a very racist remark, and anybody else would have been roasted for that.
You're absolutely right, Carrie. You're absolutely right. You know they didn't play it because she had her cloak on. Once you get enshrouded in the D, you are insulated from such accountability and criticism. To North Carolina we go next, where Mike is on the line. Mike, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Abe. I love your show. I listen to it every chance I get. I'm a doctor. I went to medical school in San Antonio, and you know, when you rotate on the OB-GYN service in San Antonio, 90% of that service is Hispanic, which is great, but quite a lot of it is illegal. You know, it's only 2 hours from the border. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that people come over the border and they get, you know, free medical care at a university system. And when the child is born, you know, they get citizenship. And so I always thought, you know, as the Bible commands us to love and take care of the alien, and I don't want to get too anti-immigrant or anti-alien, but the, you know, God has ordained the government to protect us and to administer our resources, and so I think that laws like what Trump is suggesting, substantively, it, you know, is a great thing. It's a good idea. It takes a lot of courage. I think it's not only substance-wise, it's great. Politically, it's pretty impressive too, because it's taking out of the news cycle this fake connection between him and the bomber, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's dominating the news cycle, but more important than the politics, the substance is important. I think we need a balance as Christians, you know, not viewing aliens with hate or anything, but we love them, but understand the government has a job to do to do it right.
Well said, Mike. Well said. I know exactly what you're talking about, because I prosecuted for 5 years in Harris County, Texas, in the Houston area. And the fact is, this has nothing to do with having any animus in our hearts toward any individual. I hold no animus in my heart. My wife is Hispanic. I have legal Hispanic immigrants in my family. But the reality is that we are a nation, not of men, but a nation of laws. And so our laws must mean something. And if we are going to allow an open borders policy based on a fundamental misunderstanding, we need to correct that.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.